Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. Working from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, game one of the World Series. It's here tonight. What
Big
do you think?
Day. I'm excited. It's been a long journey. I mean, we discussed yesterday the odds of actually getting here back in April, back in March. So I'm excited for this one to play out. I kind of wish that we were going seven straight days, but I'll allow for the off days. That's okay by me.
Real quick, what's your prediction?
I'm going Rays in seven. I like the bullpen. I like the defense. I know people say that they're boring to watch, but I actually really, really dig that. So I'm into it. And Randy Arozarena, he goes nuts. He continues his war path through the playoffs.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about him and the Dodgers' plan for pitching him as we talk to Boog Sciambi and Paul Imbiakides. And I think that we have a distinct way. I have an idea of a distinct way that they're going to attack him, and the Dodgers hoping to make a difference in trying to slow him down. A couple of notes as we get going. Brian Price, a longtime pitching coach and manager, most recently the pitching coach of the Phillies, announced his retirement yesterday, and he's been replaced by Jim Hickey, who's been a pitching coach for the Rays and Cubs, among other teams. The Cincinnati Reds announced that Nick Kroll, friend of the podcast, will take over as the team's head of baseball operations. Congratulations to Nick. The Dodgers' Clayton Kershaw is going to oppose the Rays' Tyler Glasnow in Game 1 of the World Series. Tyler Glasnow also, Taylor, friend of the podcast. We had him on just before we got started.
Oh, yeah.
So we got him as well. The Dodgers have not announced their Game 2 starter. They, of course, couldn't finish their series until Sunday night. But they did announce Walker Buehler will pitch Game 3. Blake Snell will start Game 2 for Tampa Bay. Presumably, Charlie Morton will go in Game 4. Here's Tyler Glasnow. Asked about what it means to start Game 1 against Clayton Kershaw.
That's unbelievable. It was someone who grew up watching him pitch. Obviously, too, just being the Dodgers, kind of where I'm from, it's a special moment for me for sure. But like you said, you knew my answer was going to be I'm just preparing like it would be any other start, just traditional game planning stuff. Go out, compete, and try and do as well as I can.
A questioner noted that the Rays have beaten three of the top four payrolls in baseball. Is that motivation or fuel for the Rays?
Last year, we kind of realized like we could compete with really anyone here. So I don't know if there's like any intimidation or anything like that. I think we all understand how good we are as a team. I think stepping outside of it, knowing that like they all do have high payrolls and we have like the lowest is pretty outstanding. I just say in terms of like just numbers in general, just like how good the front office has done and what the organization has done to put this team together is pretty amazing. But as far as competition goes, I don't really think payroll is like too much of something that players think about. For me anyway, I just think it's kind of like you see who's out there, who's in the lineup, and you attack them accordingly.
Future Hall of Famer Clayton Kershaw was asked about the Rays offense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they've got a great team. Without saying, you know, obviously their pitching staff is what gets talked about a lot, but they got a lot of guys on the offensive side of it that can, you know, make you pay if you make mistakes. And, obviously, you know, Arozarena, the way he's going right now, swinging the bat really well. Try to limit him as much as you can, but they got a lot of guys. You know, obviously they try and play the platoon advantage, so they got a lot of guys switching in and out right, left, but, they got a great team.
Of course, a lot of the conversation in this World Series is going to be around the narrative for Clayton Kershaw, the fact that the Dodgers haven't won a World Series. Will he ever win a World Series? He was asked about what winning a World Series would mean to him and the team.
I mean, obviously the World Series is a special thing. I think maybe the question is, does it compare regular season to a normal season and things like that? And I think the answer is yes. You know, just from what we've been going through in the postseason, you know, the postseason's been, you know, in some aspects a little bit harder with the extra round and things like that. It's been a little bit more of a crapshoot with, 16 teams making the postseason. This tournament that was started in October was really it's been a tough go, you know, facing different teams and in different bubbles and different things like that. So to be able to win a World Series after all this would be just as special as any other one for sure.
He was asked about learning from past playoff successes and failures.
I think every year is different. You know, obviously postseason, you have that experience to draw on. So I'm just trying to, you know, learn from that as best you can. But, you know, at the same time, every year is different. Every team is different. The Rays are a different team than the Astros and the Red Sox. And, you know, I'm going to prepare like I always do and be as ready as I can be and excited about another opportunity to get it done.
Dodgers outfielder Cody Bellinger was asked about what gives him the confidence this is actually the Dodgers year.
I think it's just the way we competed last series, man. We have full confidence in each other, And down 3-1, there really wasn't any panic in this locker room. It was like, okay, we've done this before, and we all trusted in each other, and we knew that whoever was on the mound, whoever was at the plate, would get the job done, and that's just kind of what happened. And we're gonna hope we can take that into this series. It's so unselfish around here. It's whatever we have to do to get the guy over, whatever we have to do to get the guy in. From the bullpen, I don't know for sure. They're saying whoever gets the ball, we'll pitch whenever. But it's just everyone's so unselfish, and I think that's a good way to go about it.
Mookie Betts talked about Clayton Kershaw's competitiveness.
He's so competitive. You know, he game plans, does everything right, goes about the game the right way. Great leader on the mound, takes control of everything. I mean, he just does everything right, and I think that's why he's a Hall of Famer for sure.
Rays center fielder Kevin Kiermaier talked about his availability for the World Series, providing an update on his health after he was hit by a pitch.
I'm good to go. You know, after that game seven, a little sore yesterday and still, you know, tight in there. I mean, I got drilled, so it didn't feel good by any means, but I'm definitely good enough to go. I don't think there's going to be any cause or concern moving forward. I hope not, but I definitely have progressed as each day has gone by, so I hope that continues to, you know, keep going that way, and I don't think it should be an issue whatsoever.
Bill Miller will umpire in his fourth World Series, and he will be the crew chief for the umpiring group in this postseason. The other umpires include Jerry Meals, Mark Carlson, Laz Diaz, Chris Guccione, Marvin Hudson, and Todd Titchener. The Major League Baseball Players Association announced on Monday that they've created a Curt Flood Award for player advocacy. That's a really cool thing. Before we get to Boog Shambi and Paul Embiakides, check out the latest episode of the CFB podcast with Herbie, Pollock, and Negandhi. The guys look back at Alabama's win over Georgia and look ahead to the Big Ten's opening weekend. Download and subscribe to the CFB podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck. On its way. Out of here.
The legend.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Shambi on Baseball Tonight.
The legend, Boog Shambi, who called the National League Championship Series for ESPN Radio. And I was lucky enough to sit in the as a wingman for one of the games, Game 3. Boog, it was pretty clear just watching you as you were doing that. You love radio. Why?
Yeah, it's, I mean, look, I like getting a chance to call a game regardless, but I think there's probably, I mean, a control aspect where I know that if I paint the picture and my timing is good, that, you know, I can deliver it to the listener well, but there's so much to get a chance to do between describing and then imparting information and trying to make it entertaining. I don't know. It's really cool. I think that, you know, early on in my career I wasn't sure how good I would be at it. It was challenging at times. I think, you know, you get a ton of reps and then you feel more in control. And when it's really good, you know, and they're, these parks are mic'd in a certain way, you feel like you're kind of conducting an orchestra and then having little conversations in the pauses. So it's real. And look, it's my favorite topic. I mean, it's where, you know, you and I, we joke about like how we interact in terms of the planes and even on the air, but you know, our intersection point is that we both are so engaged and interested and love it so much. And so, you know, radio and doing these games is kind of like the confluence of all those things.
Yeah. And I could tell you just love the pace of it. Right. And as you say, like being the conductor for what's going on and moving back and forth and controlling it. It was a blast working alongside you. And I appreciate that. Let's dig into this matchup. I don't think you can get away from the fact that this is going to be sort of portrayed as the team of big stars, the future Hall of Famers, the Dodgers, Clayton Kershaw and Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger versus the Island of Misfit Toys, right? It's naturally, sure. You got a team that you know has the lowest payroll in baseball against a team that has a payroll about 4 to 5 times greater than the other team. That's what the conversation is going to be, yes?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that's the way it's going to be framed. But I mean, look, the Rays had this record for a reason and they're well constructed. And, to me, where this would have been a really interesting matchup is if this had been the Dodgers of 2018, and people may not remember, but, you know, the Dodgers of 2018, Max Muncy and Cody Bellinger didn't play against lefties. And so there were real similarities between the way these rosters were constructed, as hard as that is to believe, huge payroll, small payroll. But in 2018, the Dodgers went about it in a very similar way to how the Rays went about it, at least in terms of their position playing lineup. You know, if you remember that game where Wade Miley started and pitched to one batter, it was because the Brewers were trying to take advantage or at least make the Dodgers make a decision early in that game. So that was just one thought that popped into my head. There, you know, now Muncy and Bellinger are playing regardless, and the tweaks that they make depending on the handedness of the pitcher are more, you know, in subtle spots like, you know, Peterson, Pollock, Kike Hernandez, guys, Edwin Rios, those grouping of guys, and everybody else is pretty much just in there. But it's going to be fun to watch because they're two really good teams, regardless of how it's framed, the big guy against the little guy. They're both really good.
Yeah, and they were the best teams in their respective divisions during this unusual 60-game season. Do you see any distinct advantages for either side in various elements of their team?
Yeah, the Rays have a bullpen advantage, but that's, you know, look, it's the advantage in the way they, you know, the way they do it. I think that they've The one thing that, you know, scares me a little bit with the Dodgers is just the lack of strikeouts coming out of that bullpen. I do think that the issue is this is a Rays team that does strike out offensively, and it's not a lineup that's as good as the Braves lineup. So I don't know that the Dodgers are going to be facing a team that's going to put as much pressure on them with the offense as they did in their previous series. I think it's going to be curious the way it works out. I do think, Buster, this is, and I'm probably more inclined to lean this way, but I know it's a 60 game season, but this is a Dodger team that has the best per game run differential since the 39 Yankees, and the grouping in the World Series, they have the third best per game run differential. This is one of the better teams that we've seen. I know that may be hard for people to digest, but relative to the rest of the league, this is a phenomenal Dodger team. If there's one area where it lacks a little bit, in my opinion, and certainly in the context of today's baseball, is that they don't have multiple guys coming out of their bullpen that get a lot of swing and miss. I think it's the one area where they are deficient, and I'm interested to see how that plays out.
I would agree with you. I absolutely agree with you about that. That is the Rays' advantage. It was very interesting yesterday because I'll reach out to a bunch of people, National League and American League, and say, hey, who do you think is going to win? And all the National League people are like, oh, the Dodgers. The Dodgers are a better team. The Dodgers have a better offense. The American League people were like, the Rays bullpen is awesome. And, you know, I did Ross Stripling's podcast yesterday, and we talked about that. And, you know, Ross played on the Dodgers. So he looks at, you know, their group and I think feels like that there is tremendous depth in terms of the names and the accomplishments. But you and I are on the same page in terms of that swing and miss component. The one thing I would say is, and I really felt like this manifested in the Dodgers series, you know, not only do they have a deep lineup that can score a lot of runs, they got a lot of veteran hitters who, by the end of that series, you felt like in Ian Anderson, they were going to figure out a second time. And they did. And they wore him down. And I don't feel like that the Rays necessarily have the type of firepower. So in a weird way to describe it, you know, the Rays have to keep everything down to, you know, 4-2 games, 3-2 games, 5-2. Because if one of these teams is going to explode, it's going to be the Dodgers.
I agree. I think that's I agree with that point. This is a phenomenal Dodger lineup. I agree with you about the adjustment. Now, there is one tweak that I'll throw in there, and that is the one distinction. Let me start with this. If this was a 7-in-a-row series, I really like the Dodgers. But because of the off days, I think it means that Kevin Cash can stay away from a couple of the guys that he wants to stay away from and get rest for certain guys. Because there's one aspect, you know, we could sit there and talk about multiple times through the order, but at a certain point, if like you're going to pitch Chris Martin 5 times in a 7-game series, that there is a math to that you keep giving these guys a look at a pitcher. And it gets, you know, it gets to be advantage hitter. So I don't know how, you know, how this will all shake out. But I do think that, you know, as it relates to having that off day, you know, I do think that that's a good thing for the Rays to give them a chance to, you know, to use their best guys. The question is, you know, as I'm bringing up is, you know, if they keep, even though they're the best guys, if you keep giving this lineup a chance to see them, how does that play out? And I'm not sure.
All right. I want to make this absolutely clear. You are not a narrative guy. You reflexively anti-narrative, in fact.
No.
That said, what's at stake for Clayton Kershaw in this World Series?
Nothing, in my opinion.
Wow. I disagree with you completely.
Nothing is at stake. I don't think nothing is at stake. And as evidenced by the problem with the narrative is that if he pitches twice and pitches great, it will not end the narrative. I think that we're in a place where it can only be, I think the people have kind of decided on it. I think that people feel, you know, he doesn't pitch well in the playoffs. So I don't like, because I don't think the narrative is always fair or makes sense. So I don't think that, you know, the implication of the question, I would like to make the point, good sir, is that the narrative gets handled properly based on the results. And that, and so the question is flawed, Your Honor. And I just think that it nothing is at stake, because I don't think you're going to change people's minds. Look, Clayton Kershaw, after 5 innings in his start in the NLCS, had gone 13 innings and given up 1 run. He gave up a 70-mile-an-hour 67 hopper to Ronald Acuna that turned into a double. And then because of a shift, an RBI single from Freddie Freeman, and he should have been out of the game. And like that still would have been pretty darn good, 13 innings and 2 runs. But instead he gets left in to face, the numbers get ugly, and everybody's like, wow, this guy can't do it. But no one's going to look at it that way. The other point that I keep making over and over and over again is, here's why this is not, it's not relevant anymore. Like, and this is why the narrative is stupid. We're litigating a guy that's on the decline. If you want to litigate the performance of a guy in a crucial postseason spot who's still throwing 94 miles an hour, but if you want to have this argument, go to Fangraphs, and look at what his average fastball velocity is from 2014 to 2020. And even though there was an uptick this year in a 60-game season, it goes 94, 93, 92, 91. So you're honestly sitting there saying that you think that you're implying there's something mental, emotional, psychological that he can't handle in the big spot. Well, the evidence is right there that he's declining and is 32 years old. So it's not fair to – we're not judging peak LeBron James versus peak Michael Jordan. We're not judging peak Clayton Kershaw against peak Clayton Kershaw. This is Clayton Kershaw that is not in his prime anymore. So it's a silly conversation as far as I'm concerned. And the narrative ends up being placed in the hands of people that aren't capable of handling it.
I do think you came down with a hammer. The appeals court, right? You threw it back to me to ask a better question and handle the case differently. I believe this, and you and I have talked about this privately. I think the whole thing is much more nuanced than, you know, the fact that his ERA is just two runs worse. But the fact is that his ERA is two runs worse in a large sample size, almost a full season. The comparison I've been making is to John Elway at the end of his career, right? I mean, for years, when John Elway was quarterback in the Broncos, it was, why can't he get him over the top? Why can't he get him over the top? As with Kershaw, there are a lot of factors completely out of John Elway's control as he was going through those years. But by the end of his career, you know, as a declining older quarterback, he leads the Broncos to a couple championships, and the conversation is sort of blunted. And you don't really hear, you know, John Elway brought up as someone who couldn't win the big one. That's why I think there is a little bit at stake. I don't put a lot of stock in the arguments that people make about Kershaw, but I do think if they win the World Series, then some of the middling crazy people kind of go away and they stop worrying about that. Fair?
But wouldn't you say that the middling people? No, I don't. I think in order for the people to go away, I think that he has to pitch well and they have to win the World Series. And even then, I think you're going to get but. I just think that people decide on these things. And look, I brought it up. It's like LeBron and Jordan, like this year, and the way that, like, I feel like in terms of this year, I think that LeBron, that winning was neutral for the Jordan people and losing would have been used against him.
Yeah, you're right. I can't argue that. Kershaw pitching against
I think LeBron James is the best player of all time. I said it. You can tweet at me. Bring it.
Yeah, I
best
would
player
tweet
ever.
You.
Better than Jordan.
No.
Said it.
Now, and if this was a basketball podcast, I would immediately continue the conversation, go on a diatribe, and then hang up on you. But this is a baseball podcast, so I've got some more for you. The Dodgers tonight will be facing Tyler Glasnow, Kershaw on the mound for LA. I do feel like that the Dodgers may have been freed up emotionally from getting through that 3-1 abyss against the Braves. And now they're going to be rolling into this. Like, they've stared into the abyss and they can just take off now. It kind of reminds me of when the Red Sox got through that, you know, 3-0 deficit against the Yankees in 2004 and they just crushed the Cardinals. Like, they were a team that got a second life. Woohoo! If that happened with the Dodgers, it wouldn't completely shock me. What about you?
I'm with you on that one. And also, by the way, people, like, that 2004 Cardinals team was really good. Like, that was a loaded Red Sox offense, but that Cardinals offense was legitimately an American League type of offense, and the Red Sox just mowed them down. Back to Kershaw for a second. The one thing I just wish that they would do, and I know that he doesn't want to say it publicly, but let's just stop trying to maximize every inning at like two times through the order of five innings or whichever it is. I mean, wouldn't you take five shutout innings twice from Clayton Kershaw? Just do that and everybody be happy.
That's the
other part about it.
And you listened to Dave Roberts on the same Zoom calls I did. I feel like, and he would never say this out loud, I feel like that Dave has reached that spot. When we were asking about maybe pitching game 6 and 7, I think he's in that place that you just referenced. Real quick, we got about 2.5 minutes to go. That 2004 Cardinals team was shut down. Albert Pujols was shut down in part by the fine work of our good friend Galen Carr, who is now the vice player of player personnel for the Dodgers. He used to work with the Red Sox, because the Red Sox went into that World Series with a great game plan on how to pitch pulls, which brings us to how they're going to handle Randy Arozarena of the Rays, who's been so dominant. You know the Dodgers people. You know they have a plan for pitching him. I asked Jake Odorizzi, who's been helping us out on the podcast in this postseason, about how he would approach him, and he wrote back in a text, you pound him inside with fastballs, you make him make an adjustment, and I asked him, you mean like the Dodgers did with Acuna, where they pounded him inside and made him uncomfortable? He said exactly like that. I think if you're the Dodgers, that's your goal going into this series. You got to take that guy out because nobody else is hitting.
Yeah. I think that that's, look, and the Dodgers, you know, dive into this as deep as anyone. They're going to sit there and dissect that lineup, and they will have an idea on Arozarena. Where does he handle fastballs? Where does he handle high velocity fastballs? Where does he not handle high velocity fastballs? Where does he handle velocity but not spin, et cetera? Who matches up? I mean, they're definitely going to have a plan, and yeah, they will make an adjustment. I think I'd also make this case. I think Freeman's actually the better example in terms of, as that series, you know, Acuna, they really limited the entire series. But Freeman, I felt like as the series wore on, you felt like they did a better job. And look, Freddie participates in it as well, but they did a better job with Freddie Freeman as that series wore on after he homered his first two games and was hitting rockets all over the place. I thought they continued to do a better job with Freddie Freeman. And, you know, look, the Dodgers, you know, the Rays got smart people too. It's just a matter of, you know, who's going to implement the information and do it effectively.
All right. 15 seconds. What's your pick?
I got the Dodgers in six.
Yeah, that's really scary because we completely agreed. That's the pick I turned on ESPN.com, and I'm thinking about calling them back and saying I have to withdraw that if I agree with Boot. Thank you, sir.
Oh, stop it. It was great working with you, buddy. You did an awesome job. I really enjoyed being with you all seven, and especially when you were my wingman. I appreciate the help, and you were great.
You were great, too. You know, I always have so much fun working with you. I always learn something from you.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Bye, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
And Hembo is Paul Imbecchiti. He's a researcher at ESPN who's a honcho on the show Get Up, someone admired by Mike Greenberg because he's such a wild partier. Hembo, I was just talking to Boog Shambi about the adjustments to come from the Dodgers to pitch the hottest hitter in the postseason, Arozarena. I mentioned to him that, you know, I'd exchanged the text with Jake Odorizzi, who believes that you got to pitch this guy inside. What is your sense of what's going to happen?
Yeah, I think you're right. He's the toughest out in baseball right now, and the Dodgers should employ an old school approach in attacking him, Buster, which is to say hard in and then soft away. Arozarena has produced 37 total bases this postseason on outer half pitches against only 10 on the inner half. For him, extension equals power. But he will expand the zone out there as well. Arozarena has chased more breaking balls down and away than he has chased all other pitch types in all three other quadrants of the zone combined. So I think you'll probably see them attack him similarly to how you saw teams attack Alfonso Soriano in the 2001 playoffs. You might remember he had a really good CS, then he really struggled against the Diamondbacks in the World Series, and that was a big reason why.
And specifically, I sent you an email about this early this morning, and based on the heat maps that you sent me, you know, I immediately thought of the comparison of how the Boston Red Sox pitched to Albert Pujols in the 2004 World Series, which was because Albert was so good at hitting high fastballs, the Dodgers pitched down by his feet. You know, you always hear the phrase among pitchers, you got to move his feet. I think they're going to move his feet based on the heat maps you sent me.
I think you're right. Far and away, Buster, his worst quadrant during the postseason is down and in, just like you said. He is absolutely mashed on pitches in the upper half of the zone. You can't beat him to the spot with velocity. His bat is too quick twitch. He's got too much bat speed right now, and he's seeing the ball really well. So I'm with you. I think they live in the lower half of the zone, and they probably work in and out a little bit, a hard in, sort of soft away. And the numbers really illustrate that. I think it's a really, really good observation for Moto Rizzi, and I'd be surprised if the Dodgers didn't attack him in that way.
All right, what stands out the most about the Dodgers lineup for you?
Well, I think the opposing manager, Kevin Cash's bullpen against it his maneuverings will be fascinating, massive. This postseason, the Dodgers hitters own a 990 OPS with a platoon advantage. That's the highest mark of any team. But with a platoon disadvantage, Buster, that number plummets to 664. That's the lowest mark among all teams to play more than five games this postseason. So I'm circling the names of every lefty reliever for the Rays. They collectively own a 4.50 ERA during the playoffs. Those sort of lefty-on-lefty matchups potentially could play a major factor. So far this postseason, like I said, the Dodgers have owned. Their lineup has been terrific with a platoon advantage. We'll see how Kevin Cash can make it work.
Where does the Rays lineup own the biggest advantage in your eyes?
Well, I think it's clear that both of these pitching staffs can absolutely hump, but the Rays lineup comes in with a massive advantage against that premium velocity buster. A pitch has thrown 96-plus this postseason. Tampa has homered 9 times with a 646 slugging percentage. On those same pitches, the Dodgers have hit one homer with a 322 slugging. That's certainly going to be a storyline for me to watch. Right now, and looking back over the last 10 years or so, the average fastball velocity this postseason is higher than it's ever been, and it continues to climb. So that's a number that I look forward to digging into in every series, and it's pretty clear to me the Rays have a massive advantage, at least based on the somewhat small sample size this postseason.
Which team benefits as the series plays out like a home run derby?
Well, if the long ball does dictate the outcome of the series, it probably plays into the Rays' hands because that's really the only way that they can win. In 12 postseason games, Buster, the Dodgers have 37 RBI without the benefit of the home run. The Rays have only 15 of those in 14 games. They're an all-or-nothing team. 72% of their runs come courtesy of the home run this postseason. They can only beat you one way on that side of the ball, and it's by hitting the long ball.
You sent in your notes that you expect some crazy finishes. Why?
Yeah, so I think who manages the ninth inning is going to be that's going to go a long way in this series. And it should go without saying that that's often the case. But you see now, managers often bring in these relievers in high leverage spots in the sixth, seventh, and eighth inning. So the Rays own a 6.35 earned run average in the ninth inning this postseason after posting a league best 1.60 during the regular season. The Dodgers, they own a 7.36 ERA in the ninth inning. And yet somehow both of these teams are 9-0 when leading after the eighth. If they can't figure out their ninth innings, we're going to see some late game heroics, and the execution in the ninth inning is going to be a major topic of conversation as early as tomorrow morning.
Prediction.
I'm going with the Dodgers in six. I think they can beat you multiple ways. Whatever advantage the Rays have from a pitching perspective, I think the Dodgers have an even greater advantage from a lineup perspective because they can beat you if you want to play the long game, and they can also beat you by playing National League Baseball. That is going to be the difference in the series, Dodgers in six.
All right. Scary. All three of us are on the podcast today. Boo, you, myself, all picking Dodgers in six. Taylor going with the Rays in seven.
Okay. Well, Taylor's absolutely going to be right, and it's probably going to be the Rays in a sweep given our luck.
All right, Embo. Thanks for doing this.
Later, boys.
Rays manager Kevin Cash, considered to be one of the best in the business, spoke with Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter last night. Give a listen.
The message, if anything is even needed, these guys are just stay consistent. We're going to do a good job as a staff as being consistent, even though we'll be super, super excited. But these players have embraced a very unique season and found ways to have success throughout the many challenges that's gone on. And, you know, it's an honor to sit and watch them every day and just be supportive of them.
You and I were talking about that very thing before we started to record this, Kevin. The notion of this very unusual year for all of us, but for what baseball has tried to do, the fact that it's you and the Dodgers, the two best teams who survived seven-game series to get here, it feels like cosmically this all kind of makes sense. That's just kind of wild to me how baseball always sort of figures it out. You know what I'm saying? Has that resonated with you that in this odd year that in the end these are the two best teams?
Well, it did. As soon as we watched a game last night where the Dodgers clinched to advance onto the World Series, that was the first thing that popped in my mind is that, you know, a lot of really good teams, but the two teams with the best records in their respective leagues found their way to be playing the last seven and the last two standing. I don't know how many times that's happened, but with everything and the uncertainty of this season, for it to come to an end like it will these next 7 to 10 days, whatever it takes, should be exciting for baseball.
The guys on the other side are plenty talented. And they're a really good team. But what's the thing, Kevin, about your group that makes you calm? Like, not stressed about what is to come. You know this about your group that makes you feel confident and comfortable about what is in front of you.
Look, we haven't played the Dodgers. We've played them four games, whatever it was last year. But we've played the Yankees and the Astros, two very, very talented clubs, veteran-oriented clubs, playoff pedigree clubs. Now, the Dodgers have as much playoff pedigree as any team in baseball, but saying that, those experiences are going to help us in this exciting World Series.
I'm really interested in your approach because organizationally, you guys were ahead of the curve with a lot of sort of ideas analytically, but ultimately you manage human beings. And so when you go to get the ball from a Morton or a Snell, because that's sort of what makes sense, you got to manage the human being that you're taking that ball from. What have you found has really connected you to your team? Because everything I hear and read about you is that these guys, they will do anything for you and that there's a real trust and respect. How has that been forged, Kevin?
Well, I think the biggest credit goes to the players and the buy-in and then the staff that we get to work with on a daily basis and the messaging that goes on. Look, those decisions are never easy. They're gut-wrenching. And one night they work, the next they don't. Our players, they appreciate that every decision that we're making is trying to win the game that night. And when you could get 25 or 28 guys to buy into that, it's a pretty special thing, and they have.
And if guys like a Rosarena keep doing what they're doing, they make you look pretty smart, don't they?
You're exactly right. Just stay out of his way. I don't even want to look him in the eye right now. Nothing to change what he's done. He's been spectacular for us.
He has. Let me close with this, Kevin. The Lightning win the Stanley Cup. Bruce Arians closed his press conference on Monday after a big win over Green Bay with Go Rays. There's this vibe in Tampa Bay, and it's unfortunate that people can't be together the way they typically were. But I just wonder if you could describe the sense you get from afar of what kind of support and buy-in there is in that city for what's going on in your sports town.
Incredible support. Talking to, you know, family and friends that are on a plane now coming out to Dallas, but what they have witnessed with just a lot of positivity when the Bay Area needed it. And, you know, I go back and forth with John Cooper with the Lightning. Awesome to see what the Lightning did. We all know what the Bucks are doing with Tom Brady and Bruce Arians. To be a part of that here with the Rays is pretty special. It's great for the Bay Area.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. First up, I wanted to ask you a question from yours truly. As a guy who grew up listening to baseball on the radio, how cool is it for you to be calling a World Series on the radio and with your pal, Dan Shulman? I assume you've done this before, right?
Yeah, I've done the last few World Series on ESPN Radio. You know, I'm not the prime guy. It's going to be Dan Shulman in the booth, so to speak, up in Bristol with Chris Singleton and with Jessica Mendoza. And I'll sort of be the, you know, the satellite swirling around doing pre and post game shows, dropping in during the course of the broadcast. It's an absolute blast. You know, I got to work with Dan on Sunday Night Baseball for 7 years. You know, we become good friends. I have such respect for his work. That'll be really cool. It kind of reminds me of when I got the first time I got to work alongside Peter Gammons, you know, who had been my hero as a writer. That's kind of what it is to work on the radio with Dan Shulman, who has a crazy voice. I just don't want to talk right after he talks because it illuminates how bad my voice is and how great his voice is.
That's very cool, man. All right, first up, we got Robert Bonasty. I believe that's how you're saying it here. Mookie Betts is clearly a premier defensive outfielder. So how did he end up primarily being in right field instead of center field?
I think two reasons for that. Jackie Bradley Jr., of course, was the center fielder of the Red Sox when Mookie was put in the Boston outfield. And Jackie is an extraordinary defender. The other thing, too, is a lot of what Mookie does at the time he was put in right field in Fenway Park fit that ballpark. Like, right field in Fenway Park is one of the more difficult outfield spots to play in baseball because of the size, the open space, and also the configuration with the pesky pole and how it curls around in right field and how quickly it goes out, deep out in right field.
Next up, we got Greg Steinbrecher at Greg Steinbreck. He writes in, do you think the fact that both teams in the World Series are the one seeds helps remove the asterisk from whoever wins the title?
Yeah, probably. I think that's a good point. Because let's face it, if the Marlins won the World Series this year, everyone would have said, yeah, it's 60-game season, crazy playoff format. And the fact is that the teams that were considered to be the best in their respective leagues are facing each other in this World Series.
Next up, we got Corey Rukert at Corey R underscore 12. He writes in, hey, Buster, can we blame the bad base running of the past few seasons on the wait for a homer mentality that's taken over baseball?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. For example, now, if you were to ask players to bunt, to drop a sacrifice bunt in a certain situation, there wouldn't be very many players good at that because they haven't done that much. And Corey, there's no question. In recent years, you've seen fewer stolen base attempts, less aggression on the bases. And I think I mentioned this on the podcast yesterday. There's also a feeling of they just didn't have as much preparation. And day to day, they don't have the opportunity for as much preparation to talk about situations. And so, you know, the Braves wind up on one play having two huge base running mistakes.
Next up, we got Ryan Leong at Lee Hong. He writes in, is this the best Dodgers lineup you've ever seen? He compares them to the 2015 Golden State Warriors. You've seen a lot of Dodgers lineups. You grew up as a Dodgers fan. What do you think, Buster?
Yeah, they had that one year. I think it was 1977 where they had four guys hit 30 homers. That was really cool. You had Steve Garvey, you had Ron Say, you had Reggie Smith, you had Dusty Baker, you had, you know, terrific offensive players in Davey Lopes and Bill Russell. But I do think, generally speaking, in terms of the depth of the lineup, this Dodgers lineup is better than that one.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. Enjoy Game 1 of the World Series, everyone.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. I want to say also my thanks to Boog Shambi, Paul Mbikides, and Taylor Schwenk. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.